Welcome to your AQA A-Level PE Study Podcast. I'm your tutor for today, and we're diving into one of the most fascinating and exam-rich topics in the entire specification, group dynamics. This is Section 5.2, and it's a topic that rewards students who can do more than just recall facts. The examiners want to see you apply, analyze, and evaluate. So let's get into it. By the end of this episode, you'll have a solid grip on Tuckman's stages of group formation, Karen's antecedents of cohesion, and Steiner's model of group effectiveness. You'll know exactly how to distinguish between the Ringelmann effect and social loafing, which is one of the most common mistakes candidates make, and you'll have a toolkit of exam strategies to pick up every available mark. Let's start with the big picture. What even is a group? In sports psychology, a group isn't just any collection of people. A group has shared goals, mutual awareness, and some degree of interaction. A crowd watching a football match is not a group. The football team on the pitch, that's a group. Keep that distinction in mind. It could come up in a short answer question. Now, how do groups form? That's where Bruce Tuckman comes in. Tuckman proposed in 1965 that groups move through four stages, and he later added a fifth. The stages are forming, storming, norming, performing, and adjourning. Let's walk through each one. Forming is the first stage. Members are new to the group. There's anxiety, uncertainty, and people are on their best behavior. Nobody really knows their role yet. In sport, think of a newly assembled squad at the start of a season. The coach needs to be autocratic here, giving clear direction and structure because the group can't self-organize yet. Then comes storming. This is where conflict emerges. Players compete for positions, challenge the coach's decisions, and question each other's roles. Here's a crucial exam point. Storming is not purely negative. Candidates who describe it as just conflict miss marks. Storming is necessary because it's how roles and hierarchies get established. A group that skips storming often lacks clarity about who does what. The leadership style here should shift toward democratic, involving athletes in decisions to resolve conflict constructively. Norming follows. The group starts to gel. Norms, shared expectations about behavior, are established. Cohesion begins to develop. Players accept their roles, communication improves, and there's a sense of we rather than I. A democratic leadership style continues to work well here. Performing is the goal. The group is now functioning at or near its potential. Trust is high, roles are clear, and the team works interdependently towards shared objectives. A laissez-faire approach can work here. The team largely self-manages. Think of a well-drilled Premier League squad mid-season. Finally, adjourning, added by Tuckman in 1977, describes the dissolution of the group. The season ends, the team disbands, or a project concludes. This stage is often overlooked in revision, but can appear in questions about team management. Now, and this is important for your higher mark questions, you need to be able to critique Tuckman's model. Is the progression always linear? No. A team can regress from performing back to storming if a key player leaves or a new coach arrives. Is the model realistic for all teams? Not necessarily. A national team that only assembles for tournaments may never fully reach performing. These critical points are what separate a level 3 response from a level 5 in an 8 or 15 mark question. Let's move on to cohesion. Cohesion is the tendency for a group to stick together and remain united in pursuit of its goals. Karen identified two types: task cohesion and social cohesion. Task cohesion refers to how well the group works together toward a common objective. Social cohesion refers to how much group members like each other and enjoy each other's company. Here's the key exam insight. Task cohesion is more strongly linked to performance success than social cohesion. A rugby team doesn't need to be best friends. They need to execute their set-piece plays with precision. That's task cohesion. Social cohesion matters more in individual sports with team elements, like relay running, where the baton exchange is as much about trust and relationship as it is about technique. Karen also gave us a framework for understanding what builds cohesion, his four antecedents. These are the factors that influence how cohesive a group becomes. The four categories are environmental factors, personal factors, leadership factors, and team factors. Environmental factors include things like group size. Smaller groups tend to be more cohesive, and proximity, meaning how close athletes are geographically or in training. Contracts and scholarships also fall here, as they create commitment. Personal factors relate to individual characteristics, motivation, satisfaction with the group, and personal attributes. Athletes who are intrinsically motivated tend to contribute more to cohesion. Leadership factors cover the coach's behavior, leadership style, and the quality of coach-athlete relationships. A coach who uses positive reinforcement and involves athletes in decision-making builds stronger cohesion. Team factors include team norms, the shared expectations about behavior, collective efficacy, which is the group's shared belief in their ability to succeed, and role clarity, meaning everyone knows what they're supposed to do. When you're answering a question about how to improve cohesion, don't just say, do team building activities. That's a generic answer and will not earn full marks. You need to link your suggestion to a specific antecedent. For example, increasing role clarity, a team factor in Karen's model, by ensuring each player understands their defensive responsibilities would enhance task cohesion. Now let's talk about Steiner's model of group effectiveness. This is a deceptively simple equation that carries enormous exam weight. Steiner proposed, actual productivity equals potential productivity minus losses due to faulty processes. Let's unpack this. Potential productivity is the best performance the group could theoretically achieve given the resources and abilities of its members. Actual productivity is what they actually achieve. The gap between the two is caused by faulty processes. And this is where it gets really interesting because faulty processes divide into two distinct categories. The first is coordination losses. This is the Ringelmann effect. Max Ringelmann found that as group size increases, individual effort decreases due to coordination problems. In a tug of war, eight people don't pull eight times as hard as one person. The timing, the angles, the communication all create inefficiency. This is a mechanical, structural problem. It's about how the group organizes itself. The second type of faulty process is motivational losses. This is social loafing. Social loafing occurs when individuals reduce their effort because they feel their contribution is not identifiable within the group. Latané's research showed that when people shouted in groups, they produced less noise per person than when shouting alone. The key word here is identifiability. When athletes feel their effort can't be measured or noticed, they put in less. Think of a swimmer in a relay who knows the team will win regardless. They might not push as hard as they would in an individual race. Here is the distinction that candidates most commonly get wrong. The Ringelmann effect is a coordination loss. It happens even when everyone is trying their hardest, simply because coordination breaks down. Social loafing is a motivational loss. It happens because individuals choose, consciously or not, to reduce effort. One is structural, the other is psychological. You must be explicit about this distinction in your answers. To reduce social loafing, coaches can increase identifiability by measuring individual contributions, set specific individual goals within the team context, increase personal responsibility, and build task cohesion so athletes feel accountable to their teammates. Now let's talk exam technique. This is where marks are won and lost. For three mark questions, you typically need to identify and briefly explain. Use the structure, state the term, define it, give a sporting example. For example, social loafing is a motivational loss where an individual reduces effort because their contribution is not identifiable. For example, a rower in an 8 may exert less effort than in a single skull as their individual output cannot be easily measured. For six mark questions, you need to show application. Take a specific scenario, usually given in the question, and apply the model to it. Name the model, use its terminology, and link it directly to the scenario. Don't just describe the model in abstract terms. For 8 or 15 mark questions, you must evaluate. This means identifying strengths and limitations of models, considering alternative explanations, and drawing synoptic links to other topics like leadership, motivation, or arousal. The mark scheme explicitly rewards candidates who can critique the models rather than just describe them. Watch out for these common mistakes. First, conflating the Ringelmann effect with social loafing. They are different types of loss. Always specify whether you're describing a coordination problem or a motivational deficit. Second, describing storming as purely negative. It's a necessary stage. Third, giving generic team-building suggestions without linking to Karen's antecedents. Fourth, forgetting that Tuckman's model is not always linear. Teams can regress. Now for your quickfire recall quiz. I'll ask five questions. Pause the podcast and try to answer before I give you the answer. Question one, what is Steiner's formula for group effectiveness? Pause now. The answer is actual productivity equals potential productivity minus losses due to faulty processes. Question 2. What type of loss is the Ringelmann effect? Pause now. The answer is a coordination loss. Question 3. Name the 4 antecedents of cohesion in Karen's model. Pause now. The answer is environmental, personal, leadership, and team factors. Question 4. Which type of cohesion is most critical for success in interactive sports like rugby? Pause now. The answer is task cohesion. Question 5. What leadership style is most appropriate during Tuchman's storming stage? Pause now. The answer is democratic, involving athletes in resolving conflict and establishing roles. How did you do? If you got all 5, you're in great shape. If you struggled, go back and reread the relevant section of your notes. Let's wrap up. Group dynamics is a topic that rewards precision. The examiners are looking for candidates who can distinguish between models, apply them to specific sporting contexts, and critically evaluate their limitations. Remember, Tuchman gives you the journey of group formation. Karen tells you what builds cohesion. Steiner explains why groups underperform, and the Ringelmann effect and social loafing are 2 very different reasons why. Use the mnemonic FSNAP for Tuchman forming, storming, norming, adjourning, with performing as the peak. For Karen, remember EPLT, environmental, personal, leadership, team. And for Steiner, remember the equation, actual equals potential minus faulty. Good luck in your revision. You've got this. See you in the next episode.